With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
Truth.
Welcome to Trusting the Truth with Samuel Tolley, where we view the world through the lens of Jesus Christ. We do not view Jesus Christ through the lens of the world.
Are you God's man? Are you a saved man? Weren't you called to righteousness and holiness? It's time to step up. All of God's men must step up. We've laid back for far too long. We've avoided the fight. Now the enemy is strong. The sidelines, they are gone. And the battle lines have been drawn. This is a battle that starts on our knees or on our face, if he's so pleased. God didn't call women to lead. Many called to take a stand. To stand for our families, to stand for our land. Many call to illuminate the way. Darkness must flee in the light of day. Men dedicated to him and him alone. Men who garner strength from his mighty throne. Oh, my brothers, it's time to stand. If we stand, it won't be alone. How you doing? This is Sam Tolley for Trusting the Truth. And today we start our inaugural Manly Monday. Manly Monday is designed to bring godly men together to discuss the things that we need to discuss. Many things that society does not want to discuss. And today I have the perfect gentleman for that. Men whose podcasts, God and government. And you know, the funny thing is, these men, just like me, talk about the things that folks say when you get together, you should never talk about religion and politics. So I'm gonna bring in John Steinrich and Mark Richardson from God and Government.
Hello.
Hey.
Gentlemen. So here we are. All right. God and Government and Trusting the Truth. I tell you, with government, you don't never know if you got the truth or not.
The aphorism is that if the politician's lips are moving, they're lying. So,
right,
probably not, Sam.
Well, the politician truth is very relative. So, maybe distant cousins. I don't know. Maybe third uncle twice removed. You never know.
Yeah, well, you know, it flip flops so much. You know, I started a thing called the Daily Dose, and I did one the other day about doublespeak. And I use this Ketanji Jackson as an example when she was having her senators were interviewing her for the Supreme Court. And so Senator Feinstein asked her, "Will you support abortion?" Right. And she says, "Yeah, I believe in a woman's right to terminate her pregnancy." So then Senator Blackburn came in and said, "Can you define a woman?" And she said, "No, I can't." So, you're gonna You know, how's a person going to defend something she don't even know what she's talking about? I mean, it's pure doublespeak.
Only a college education could produce that kind of thinking.
Yeah.
Or a job at CNN, one of the two.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, maybe. Well, they got some openings on ESPN. Maybe they some of those folks,
that's
too.
That's true, yeah.
But God and government, yes. John and Mark. So I'd like you guys to say a little bit about yourselves. I mean, like I said, I know a little bit, but other folks don't. So whoever wants to go first, go for it.
Wow. Can I go first, Mark, please?
Sure. Go ahead.
All right. Well, my name is John Steinrich, and if there's anyone to blame for the God and Government podcast, it's me, because I came up with this idea. And Mark and I have been working on this in one fashion or another for about 7 years. And what happened was around the 2016 election, Mark and I were in the congregation, and I think we both noticed that people were not paying attention to facts or policies or anything like that. They were just sort of willy-nilly going on their emotions, right? And the church itself was not doing anything to kind of instruct people on how to navigate the political scene. And so we started a discussion group about this to say, look, we're Christians first, and so our politics have to be informed by the Bible. And so whatever you end up, or how you vote, okay, I know what I believe, you may believe differently. At least let us as Christians encourage one another to go to the scriptures and develop our rationale for voting. And what we discovered in this process is that, you know, there were other sort of islands of thought that were like us, people who had shared similar values, and we're both, pretty politically and religiously conservative. And there were some people who were interested that were, you know, left-leaning politically. And as we went along, we found that the people who were left-leaning politically, even though they were Christians, really didn't want to get into the discussion. They didn't want to stay in the discussion, which was really unfortunate. So as time went by, you know, Mark and I went into the podcasting domain. And we've been doing the God and Government podcast for about 4 years to just try to put the ideas out there, you know, in a non-confrontational, non-angry manner, but allow people to say, you know what, the Bible is not just a book of fables. It's not just a book that you open on Sunday morning, but you actually apply it as best as you can to your daily life and the decisions, you know, the way you vote and so forth. So that's the background of it. You know, professionally, I'm retired. I'm happy to say I worked in public social services for a long time, and I just said goodbye to my career so that I can focus on things that really mean more to me, which is my marriage, my family, my ministry, and music, which is my, largely it's been a part-time thing for me. So those are the things that I intend to do, and that's who I am. I also have a master's degree in church history, so I have a little bit of, academic knowledge to go behind my political opinions. That's me.
Before you go, Mark, let me ask John. It was funny when you were Sam. What you were saying, the scripture came to mind: man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God.
Yeah,
so that
exactly.
Pretty much pertains to every day and everything.
Agreed.
That we have to do that. But you say you retired now?
I retired. Yeah, I took my retirement. I've been a public social servant for 21 years, basically. And I decided that God has been calling me to go on to do a new thing in my life and go on to a new phase. So I took my retirement. I'm going to venture. I'm not going to sit around and do nothing. I'm going to work at other stuff. But technically speaking, I'm a retiree.
Well,
and
for
I
some,
get the discount dinner at Denny's now, if I want.
For someone that retired in 2017, let me welcome you to the club.
I am happy to be there. I love it.
And let me assure you what you're going to find out. This is the strangest thing in the world. You're going to find out that you have less time to accomplish the things you want to accomplish now as you're retired than you did when you were working.
Wow. Okay. Well, I just have to be a good time manager and pray to God a lot.
Here. All right, Mark, your turn.
Yeah. Following John is like trying to follow Elvis. Well, let's see. I've got a washboard and some spoons. Let's see what I can do with those. Mark Richardson. I guess you could say I'm sort of as we announce ourselves on The God and Government, I am John's wingman. I'm also like, I also consider myself the comedy relief, but from a spiritual standpoint, I like to, you know, I mean, John's a well-versed individual. It's like, I couldn't sit up there and go, yeah, I can't hold a candle to that. However, I have read, what's it called? Oh, Bible. Yes. I've read the Bible. and my perspective tends to be more of the everyman. That's the thing I really try to promote with God and Government. You know, we both quote scriptures. We both try to tie those scriptures into what's going on from a government standpoint. I try to put myself in the shoes of the person who's going day to day, who has to pay their bills, who has to listen to the endless barrage of rhetoric that comes from the left and from the Democratic Party that tells them if you believe in God, if you don't sign on with the idea that abortion is a sound idea, if you believe there's more than two genders, if you believe that the economics that we're going through currently is a good thing, and thank you to the Democratic Party for putting us in that position. I try to give a perspective as, hey, look, I'm not a bad person. I'm just trying to show you I'm not trying to change your mind. I'm trying to show you the other side of things. And like what John described, part of my dissatisfaction with things, especially from a church standpoint, came from, I guess you could say the tipping point was Mr. Floyd. And what I saw in our ministry was anything but spiritual or godly, as opposed to going first to God and to Jesus, and then taking that situation from that approach. As John described earlier, we went from an emotional standpoint.
You said Mr. Floyd, we're talking about
George Floyd.
About,
yes.
Okay. I just want to be clear on what we were talking about.
Yep.
Go ahead. Not fair enough. Yeah, go ahead.
And what we saw was the fact that if we didn't, especially myself as a black male, if I didn't automatically sign on to the idea that he was murdered and there was injustice, let me grab a Molotov cocktail and burn down my local store, then obviously I was the enemy. And I saw firsthand, I don't even know what to describe. It was almost as if we went down the rabbit hole of insanity. I mean, things that I saw, friends that had been living life together for 20, 30 plus years, all of a sudden, no longer on speaking terms. White guilt came out in droves, where all of a sudden these people, real meaning rational individuals, decided that because I'm white, I'm guilty. I have my own white privilege. And I first thing out of my mouth was, well, can I have some of that privilege? I could use some of that privilege. Can I have that privilege on toast? I mean, it's like, where do I sign up for this white privilege thing? It seems pretty good. It seems like a pretty good deal. But the mindset was just, I don't even know what to describe it as. It's almost like a schizophrenic mind change. These people you were friends with, no longer friends. Now you're the enemy. And we, both myself and John, kind of experienced sort of a negative backlash because we decided, you know, I'm sorry. I'm sure your Kool-Aid is a very nice flavor, but I'd rather not have it. So I'll pass.
Wait a minute. Was that them, their Kool-Aid, or your Kool-Aid?
It's like their Kool-Aid. We tried to offer them our Kool-Aid, and it was spiked out of our hand. So
okay.
Well, there you go. And so after that, I decided to change ministries, stabilized the ministry that I went. Was sort of more closer to what I felt biblically was a Bible-based ministry.
We're talking about changing churches?
Changing. It was the same church, but different location. I went from LA to Simi Valley, California.
Okay.
The ministry leader out there was a friend of my wife's and really helped take us in after the traumatic experiences that we experienced in the LA church.
Wait a minute. You, a black man, decided to leave the LA church and go to church in Simi Valley?
I know. How dare I?
You know, just for the audience that don't know, Simi Valley is known as a predominantly white area. Most of the LAPD I hear live in Simi Valley. I mean, I'm not against it, but I'm just trying to get perspective here.
Right. A lot of the sheriffs, like some of the sheriff's deputies reside out there too. Well, you know, you know, Sam, that's really why every year I have to retest my black card. So.
Well, you sound to me a lot like me when you're thinking from a rational biblical perspective. And like you said, many of these people are emotional. It doesn't matter. And I know this wasn't the topic we were going to get on to, but it doesn't matter that Mr. Floyd would rob a pregnant woman at gunpoint, would do a bunch of different stuff, was actually in the midst of a crime. Now, the procedure that went on with him as far as Minneapolis police was concerned, yeah, I'm not making excuses for anybody. There was a whole lot of crap to go around. But what came of that, what blows my mind is, like you said, people would riot and burn down their own neighborhoods. Like, you made us mad, so I'm going to make sure I got to go 20 miles and get groceries next week. You know, but they didn't go to the suburbs and burn down the white folks' neighborhood that they was mad at. Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. I'm not trying to go there, but I'm interested in how you guys got to be friends.
Wow. We've known each other probably 20 or more years.
I'm sorry?
We're probably 20 or more years we've known each other.
Because I know that you came from New Jersey and you came from my wife's hometown, Detroit.
Yeah.
Correct.
Well, we both landed up in Los Angeles in the early 90s.
Okay.
And then we both landed up in the same ministry in the mid 90s. And that's how we, you know, we had a very active ministry, which was relatively apolitical back then. And it was a very active sort of arts ministry, and both Mark and I are at least peripherally in the arts. And mm-hmm. so we congregated with a lot of people who were in the arts in Hollywood. It was just a very active ministry that was very evangelistic. So we would all be involved in reaching out to people and doing Bible studies and having Bible talk groups and, you know, really, really trying to have a Jesus-centered impact in the entertainment industry. And so you know, that's how I you know, met Mark. And it wasn't until years later that we discovered that we were sort of islands of conservative thought in this sea of, you know, de facto liberalism in our ministry. And that was maybe 8 or 10 years ago when we, you know, connected on that level. And it was refreshing, because I would find myself like, man, I have to mute myself around a lot of people, because they, you know, they just didn't get it, or they didn't understand, or they didn't agree, or whatnot. And so I'm like, oh, instead of making waves, I'll just sit here and be quiet unto myself, until I met Mark and some other guys in the church. Like, oh wow, we kind of think alike. And that's basically what it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, because that it brings me that your friendship. It may seem simple. I'm trying to see if I can frame this right. Mark sort of alluded to it, that when all this mess with the Floyds and the different racial animosity started kicking in, because from my perspective, this country wasn't nowhere near as separate as it was until Obama came in the office and they started fanning the flames. Suppose, you know, he was hoping change, you know, and then, of course, from my perspective, we all hope we had some change by the time he got out. But he fanned the flame of division. And now, you know, like, these fellas now have a blowtorch to it. But for your personal relationship, it seemed like it was strong in spite of that, because I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but it seemed like the foundation of it was more men of God based.
Yes.
You know, and it's just like me. I go to my church is actually, there's more white folks here than anybody, but it's not a color thing. We don't look at it as a color thing. Mm-hmm. If you look at it, these are men that I associate with that believe in Jesus Christ, that he's Lord, and that we want to bring him glory, and we want to live in a manner that is respectful to him. Mm-hmm. And so I try, like, one of the terms that I use in my show is viewing the world through the lens of Jesus Christ, not viewing Jesus Christ through the lens of the world. With that perspective, it's easy to see right from wrong. But we got people that can't handle that. So I was just looking at you guys as not as a couple. You know, I know you guys are individually married. Yep. You know, for women. I got to be clear, they're married to me. Yeah. And not the same one.
Yeah, we, you know, I think that's true. Like, at the base of everything, Mark and I do not agree on every bullet point, right? And when you listen to our podcast, you're going to find that we differ. But there's never a love lost over those differences. And I think the core of it is our mutual love of God. And that something else that we share that we, you know, as a conservative living in a blue area, if you want to survive without being a hermit, you actually have to learn how to appreciate other people who don't agree with you. And both of us have that similar values. Like, you know what? Even if this person in my ministry disagrees with me, I still can love them as a brother in Christ, right? And mm-hmm. do my best to try to shed as much light as possible in the hopes that maybe their viewpoint will come closer to the Bible. But, you know, I don't have that animosity towards other people who disagree with me. I think Mark is similar of mindset.
Nah, I hate them all, but no, I'm kidding. I jest, folks. It's much like the truth. I don't come out. I have no interest in getting myself all worked up and frustrated over people whose thought and ideology is basically a dog is a cat, or a table is a woman. You know, it's I try to understand where they're coming from, but at the same time too, I have to balance it out with, hey, look, you know, I'm following Jesus. I'm following the Bible. You know, the Bible says, hey, you know, I love you. You know, we can still hang out and have coffee, what have you, but I'm not going to sit here with a straight face and embrace your principles and philosophies. If you're having trouble with that, I'm sorry, but I have to have something. Oh, that's where conviction. That's the word I'm looking for. I have to have something to stand on and say, you know, this is black, this is white. 1 + 1 = 2, not 5, not 7. It doesn't. You know, it's like, so if I'm sorry that I'm not going to embrace your insanity, or basically agree to your insanity. Right. I think an author, a podcaster, radio host. I guess he's running for president as well. Larry Elder in California used one of my favorite quotes, which was, "Facts to a liberal is like kryptonite to Superman." So I can present every fact, data points, everything else that I can, but because you are emotionally attached to your religion, i.e. liberalism, there's anything that I can say will basically be shouted down. I'll be pilloried. I'll basically be tarred and feathered and hung upon my, hoisted upon my own petard. Oh, well. You know,
for me, I look at a couple of things. One of the things I look at is that when these children grow up, there needs to be some kind of record that there were some sane people in the world. That all of us didn't lose our mind, just like what Mark was talking about. Yeah, I'm not going to deal with the stupid stuff. They need to have a record that there were some people that never sold out to the wokeism and the stupid stuff, you know. And I learned a long time ago when I was in a very dysfunctional relationship. It was so dysfunctional that I was being lied to so much that I was trying to justify the lie, and then I was also trying to rationalize why this person, or try to understand why this person thought the way they thought. And the more I tried that, the crazier I became. And I realized that you can't do crazy unless you're crazy. So I quit trying to understand why people are nutty. I decided that I'm just gonna stay with the sane side, present the sane side, and let, you know, if they wake up, God bless them. And if they don't, you know, there's room for them folks who went to Sodom. You know, I don't know.
Sam, how dare you use logic and rationale? Shame on you, sir. Shame. I mean, you know,
that's what we have to do. Let us see here. So, gentlemen, the day was the end of the Supreme Court session. And I wanted to talk about a few of those cases since I had God and government guys with me.
That sounds good to me.
You know, one of those cases was Creative LLC and LNS. I'm not sure the pronunciation, but it was this woman in Colorado. And these folks in Colorado is crazy. Mm-hmm. They went after the bakery guy because he wouldn't do the cake. Then they sent somebody else after the bakery guy. I think he still has another case pending, which maybe, hopefully, this one to get rid of. But they ruled 6-3 that you can't force somebody to make a gay or whatever website, something that's against your First Amendment rights of freedom mm-hmm. of religion. Because these people are trying everything to truncate your religion. And by the way, I'm going to sort of segue on something I read with this, which is not in this, but it's in Michigan, where they're trying to put in a law. The governor over there is trying to put in a law that if you offend somebody, you can go to jail. You know, you say the wrong thing. I don't know if you've read about that yet, Mark, but I mean, it's nutty. So what do you guys think about that case and that other Michigan nonsense?
So basically, what happened there is that, just to refresh my memory, so the Supreme Court has basically reaffirmed the position that you do not have, you cannot force speech. Is that what it is? You cannot force somebody to use their intellectual property to make a message that they don't agree with.
Yeah, as I okay. believe that's what, well, they, what the I think what the agreement terrific. Vote was. Yeah.
Go ahead, Mark. I'm looking up a verse, and I'll leave Mark to comment because I want to use a scripture to discuss this.
Oh wow! It's like well, of course, Dr. Steinberg over there. It's like he'll be delving into scripture. I'll be like, but the main point about that was, it's just, if you think about it, once again, on its face of logic, and people who get all upset about that is, you want to pose them a question and going, okay, say you're a liberal, you voted for Biden, you voted for your Democratic legislature, governor, what have you. You feel pretty good about yourself and you have a website. Let's flip things around. What if I decide to come to you and say, for example, you're gay or lesbian, and I came to you and said, look, I would like a website that affirms marriage is between a man and a woman. You know, I'm willing to pay. Were you able to do that? I think the person would say no so fast, it would make my head spin. But yet, when the roles are reversed, there's outrage. You know, people are clutching their pearls, fainting couches aplenty, and you kind of sit back and wonder. It's like, so, all for thee and not for me. So you're saying, so your standards are, you know, you can say no and everything's great, but if this person says no, then all of a sudden, my rights have been violated. I'm offended. I'm going to sue. Common sense. It's not common, and there's not much sense. So,
yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, this country, as far as I understood, like one of our principles, like, was freedom of religion. I don't know if I got an unusual idea in my head about that, but I thought that we were predicated in part on the fact that no law should be passed that would oblige anybody to follow any kind of specific religion, and basically that we're also supposed to be able to say what we want to say. So compelled speech or compelled religion is unconstitutional, and because we have those as tenets, it's sort of in our DNA as Americans to say, I don't agree with that philosophy. And I'm a religious person. I don't agree with it because of religious reasons. And then if I'm actually devout and biblical, I go to the Bible. And the Bible says in Romans 14:23, but whoever has doubts is condemned if he eats, because the eating is not from faith. Whatever does not proceed from faith is sin. Now, this passage is talking, you know, in an ancient context of eating food from, you know, dedicated to idols. But the principle that the Bible lays out, if you do something and it does not proceed from faith, you're sinning. So essentially, if somebody comes into that, you know, bakery or whatever company is to make something, and you're asking them to do something that violates their conscience or violates their religious principles, you are asking them to do a sin. Now, I know that's not a popular word in our modern lexicon, but sinning is basically going, you know, it's worse than speeding, you know, running through a red light and, you know, getting ticked off at a cop. It's violating the creator of the universe's principles. And that has long lasting effects. And as people of faith, we want to try to avoid those things. We don't want to be mean to people. We don't want to deny people their liberties, but we also do not want to jump into things that make us have to sin. And that, I would say, that has to be brought out. We as Christians have to advocate for that. I don't, you know, you want to have whatever message you want. I'm not going to be the one to do it. And you should be okay with that. And here's another thing, guys. I bet you dimes to dollars that there is not one radical, you know, woke person who would take an offensive message into a bakery owned by someone who is Muslim, who's a devout Muslim, and say, hey, you know what, make me a ham sandwich, and oh, by the way, you know, right, you know, Adam and Steve are getting married. They wouldn't do it because they know that the people who follow that faith generally actually have some gumption and are going to push back big time. Whereas, you know, the nice, soft, you know, Christianly type of person is a nice, easy target. And I think we as Christians have to stop purporting, you know, presenting ourselves as easy targets and say, no, we're going to push back. You're not going to do it to me. You're not going to do it to my Jewish neighbor. You're not going to do it to my Muslim neighbor or any other neighbor, because we all have freedom of religion, and not one of us, whatever our faith tradition is, wants to sin just because you have your particular viewpoint.
Well, you know, I believe that wokeism in and of itself is a religion. And they're trying to indoctrinate us into that religion. And the piggyback on the scripture you had was one I read the other day. It was in James 4 and 17. It says, so whoever does the right thing, whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him, it is sin. Mm. So, yeah, if this woman say, I can't do that. Just like the baker guy, I can't do that.
Can't do it.
You know? I mean, that's sin. That's wrong. I mean, I'm just flat out violating my fidelity with the Lord. I'm not going to do it. And but see, you're right. Another point about the Muslim, they would never bring this stuff to a Muslim.
Never.
You know, let them go to Dearborn, Michigan, and bring that kind of stuff and say, yeah, we're going to, yeah, you know, I want you to bake this cake for me, and I want a pig on top of it. Yeah. All hell would break loose. You know, so no, this is we are the target, and we are the target because, unfortunately, too many of our men quit being manly.
That's correct.
You know, they quit standing up, and they forgot the fact when they read that Jesus said, "Turn the other cheek." It wasn't forever, and he also told them, "If you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and get one."
That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, where were you going? I see Mark bitten at the chop. Go for it.
Go, Mark.
Oh, was I? It's like I was gnashing on a chop. But, you know, it's like let's call this what it is. I mean, it's the fact when you look in Romans, let's see where I'm at. I'm at Romans. Romans 1:26. Oh no, let's go a little further. Romans 1:24. Oh, I mean, Romans is just basically gold anyway. Mm-hmm. So let's start at 23. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him. But their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. And then what happened? It's like, what basically does God say when you basically stop following him and you start following, wokeism. When you start following the God of woke, which is, I don't know what it is, a tree branch, a telephone pole, I'm not sure, but
it's but Floyd. It's
like, oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's like it's Floyd. It's
all, it may change between now and the time we get through recording.
Yeah. Oh yeah, but it basically is like, or you could sit back and say, it's any unfortunate quote unquote black man who was murdered by evil white cops, regardless of the circumstances, like as you said earlier, as to what are these? I mean, we made George Floyd out to be a saint. I'm having trouble reconciling his history and his past with sainthood, but you know, okay, there you go.
You just gotta go visit his statues and you know, and repent, I guess. Oh, no, go
ahead. I get would I have to bring a ham sandwich for you know, it's like to give it up for as a sample, but you know, that therefore God gave them over in their sinful desires of their hearts and sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshiped and served created things rather than the creator who is forever praised. Amen. Because of this, God gave them over to shameful lust. Even their women exchanged natural relations for unnatural ones. In the same way, men also abandoned natural relations with women and were inflamed with lust for one another. Men committed indecent acts with other men and received in themselves the due penalty for their perversion. Furthermore, one more line, since they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, he gave them over to a depraved mind to do what ought not to be done. They become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity. They're full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They're gossips, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, and boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Does that ring a bell with anybody's head there?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, they disobey their parents. They are senseless, faithless, heartless, ruthless. Although they know God's righteous decree that those who do such things deserve death, they not only continue to do these things, but also approve of those who practice them. Mm. That's the world 2023.
Mark, I only have one thing to say to that, which is that you have become the new black face of white supremacy by reading that passage.
Exactly. And people, I know people are basically like, oh, how dare he say that? Oh! I'm sorry, folks. Facts is facts. I'm sorry you don't like the facts, but you need to hear them. So there you go.
Well, that's where we are. I mean, in 2023, it's an ugly situation, but at least we have and this is why people need to understand it is very important who wins presidential elections, you know, because of this situation right now with the Supreme Court justices that we have. Because the three that went against all these rulings, you know, if they would have had three more on their side, it would have been all kinds of weird stuff. So, you know, people, you know, they need to consider that when they're voting, that it's not just about the man that's in the office and his bad tweets and how he's not nice all the time. And, you know, it's about what kind of policies that they're going to put forth, what kind of justices. And it's not just the Supreme Court. They put federal judges all throughout the nation.
Yeah.
You know, so people shouldn't be neglectful on that. But let's go to the next case. I don't want to make sure we get it. The next one I want to talk about is that student loan forgiveness. You know, because I told people, I said, hey, wait, okay, I tell you what. If we're going to go down that route, I want my money back. You know, but I mean, it was a ridiculous, actually, it was a Ponzi, it was a lie from day one. Biden even admitted that it was not constitutional. And it shows several things. The fact that they don't teach civics in schools anymore, the fact that our society has been dumbed down to the point where they'll just believe anything, the fact that our news, so-called news media won't tell the public the truth, and they let these people run around for a couple of years thinking I'm gonna get loan forgiveness. Just like when they had the people, the moratorium on renters paying because of the COVID thing. You know, got people thinking about, oh, I'm never gonna have to pay that money. You know, I don't have to pay that money. Somebody's gotta pay that money.
Oh yeah.
You know, and these owners aren't going to just take it in the shorts forever. The bank's not going to take it in the shorts forever.
Yeah. Once again, first off, our friends in the media, which people, if they took civics, you know, back in the day, you'd understand that's why it's called the Fifth Estate. The media was basically designed or created to be a balance between both the people and the government by providing, all right, this senator said this. We present that. This is what they believe. This is what this bill will accomplish. All right. We disagree with that because of A, B, C, and D. We leave it to the people. Now, here's the information. Here's the front. Here's the for. Here's the against. You make your decision. Once upon a time, that used to be the case. But now the media has leaned so far to the left that it's basically just become a propaganda tool for the, you know, for the Democratic Party. And this loan forgiveness is the biggest sham I've ever seen in my life. First off, you're getting emotional and you're basically demanding something that you don't deserve in the first place. And if critical thinking is just a very simple process of asking relative questions regarding the situation and coming up with your own conclusions. So what you're basically telling me is, so everybody else who did the right thing, who was responsible, was a man or a strong woman who took the loan, understood what the loan meant, understood what it was due, decided to go to a school that you probably may not have afforded, but you decided to go anyway, got your degree, and you knew now the payment was due. So now all of a sudden it's because, well, wait a minute, I took my degree in liberal basket weaving 101 and I can't afford that $60,000 loan payment. I want to embrace my inner Bono from U2, and I want that loan wiped. I want that wiped out. I want to say, but wait a minute. Do you understand basic economics? Money just doesn't disappear. There's still people who invested in that money, and their investment gave you that education. Oh, but silly me. I don't understand life. I just want what I want. So you're a narcissist. You're basically navel gazing, and it's me, 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 and I want what I want now. No, that's not life. Or is that being called an adult? You have responsibilities. Take your responsibilities, pay your bills, and live with it. If you can't afford it, oh, here's a crazy idea: get a second job, sell your stuff, do whatever you hold yard sales, mow lawns, do whatever you need to do to pay your debt, because that's biblical. That's godly. What you're trying to pull off isn't godly. It's a joke. And also it basically spits on everybody else who did the right thing over years. By the way, we didn't just do this loan forgiveness 2 weeks ago, folks. That's been happening for decades. Those people paid their bill. What are you going to do? Is it going to make the government pay them back? There's no repercussions for your actions. People just say things and they go, well, I don't want to think about this. I just want it to happen. Okay.
So you think that woman's black liberal feminist historical education that they obtain, they shouldn't have to pay for that?
Just on the face of the goal of the degree, it's like, what are you doing with that? maybe you should get a refund and go back and do something else. I didn't say.
I mean, you know, it's go ahead, John.
If anybody should be repaid, it's the taxpayers. Quite honestly, we're the ones who've been putting the bill for. You know, remember, Mark, we had a friend of ours named Dan on our show, and he was joking around and said that, you know, people were getting degrees in selective outrage and Marxist basket weaving, you know, and that's true. People have been getting degrees in all kind of junk that they can't use or don't use. And so the taxpayers are footing the bill. But this discussion makes me think of the principle that Jesus talked about in Mark 14:25. And as a Christian, this to me is like, okay, you took out the loan. You know what you were doing. You have to be responsible. Without reading it verbatim here in the Bible, in Luke 14, Jesus tells a story. Hey, look, there's a guy. He starts to build a house, right? And, oh, he ran out of money, and he can't finish it. And all the people walk by, and they're mocking him because he couldn't finish it. And the principle is count the cost before you do something. That is maturity. And I love the theme that you have, Sam, of Manly Mondays. This is a deficit, a vast deficit in our culture. For some reason, in the last 50 or 60 years, we have basically taken the idea of manliness or maturity and thrown it in the garbage, and we've attempted to infantilize everyone and insulate them from the effects or the consequences of their decisions. We are not going to raise a generation of young people who can actually work, build the economy, take care of senior citizens, raise children, build communities, if nobody is on the hook to pay their bills and take responsibility for their decisions. And the taxpayer should not be the insurance plan. I'm sorry, it just shouldn't.
Well, you're right. Go ahead. I was just about to just piggyback on that. And by making them infants, by making men basically young children who basically run around on scooters and have man buns and they do all types of ridiculous behavior instead of being adults, instead of depending on focusing on God, you know, praying to God for taking God's word and pouring that into responsibility, I instead turn that into my mom, which is the government. The government will take care of me. The government will rub my head and tell me that I'm a good boy and give me stuff without me having to do much for it or nothing at all.
And see, that's what I'm saying. It's feminizing the manhood. I remember when my kids were little and, you know, they say, oh, can we get this? Can we get this? I said, I don't have any money. Write a check. You know, like, mm-hmm. I said, they don't understand the concept. And that's the way they have us now. They, like you said, the government is mommy or daddy. They're feminizing us. And I tell people, look, why do you think, and this is Sam Tolley, that many of these states are going for, you know, legalized drugs or whatnot? You know, they're anesthetizing the population. An anesthetized population is a compliant population. If folks don't know their rights as a citizen, they can't exercise the rights. If you keep them stupefied, then they can't stop you from doing what they want to do to you. And then they take control of the situation. But these same people, they're not letting their kids go to broke down schools that aren't teaching anything. And they're not letting their kids get all drugged up. They're making their kids get educated and preparing them to take over their spot when they get too old to run the masses. And like I said, in California, where you turn it into, you're destroying the middle class, or either they're leaving, you know, you're going to have the two-tiered citizenry, where you got the ultra wealthy or the poor, or people who were fortunate enough to inherit their property from their parents, and they are still living within their means, and they haven't got greedy. Well, I don't want to say greedy, but they haven't decided to clock in that nest egg if they haven't refinanced it to death, and then move to Texas or Florida or North Carolina and or wherever and get the hell out of there. But this society, I think it's intentional. I think it's intentional to feminize men. And that's the one thing we got to fight against thoroughly, absolutely, the feminization of men.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and you make a good point, Sam. And you can even look at it. I think one of the biggest thing that we have to make sure we're aware of and that we fight for is culture. You know, and politics is downstream of culture, as Andrew Breitbart once quoted. And you can even see it in movies. You can see it in television. You can even see it in comic books with the feminization of men. It's like where you have gender swapping. We have men, like comic book superheroes that are now women. You have so many movies now where they're featuring in. It's like the woman is the strong, independent, brilliant individual who will save the world. And the man's a centerpiece. And it goes on and on and on. And this is talked about. Like I said, we have radio.
And by the way, that woman has just taken over the place from the homosexual, because that was the one that they were featuring previously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So you you know what's coming next, the trans.
I was about to say, except for the fact that in real life, we don't want a real woman. We want a tranny to play the real woman in real life.
And you kind of sit back and go, what? but let's carry that to its end game. when you have, boys used to be able to go out in elementary school and play tag and play dodgeball and run around and tackle one another and get scrapes and basically act a fool because we were, it was like we were young men and we had to vent all that energy. And you have now a lot of administrators who are women. You have a lot of school boards are controlled mainly by women who are basically throttling that emotion and basically trying to channel it into becoming women. And it's like, and it, that experiment will is doomed to failure because men are men and you need to make, and you need to bring strong men into the system to make these boys into men. So that they can not only support their mate or the other women, but also support society. Because we've seen it first and foremost. It's, you know, it's like, I hate, once again, hate to offend people, but men are different from women. I know it comes out of shock. I know that stuns you, but it's the case. Men's structure is different from women. It's built for strength, lifting, protecting, fighting, so forth and so on. That's not saying that the woman can't go out and fight, but if I'm doing a comparison, I think the man should win. Even you see it in some of the movies nowadays. Gosh, what was that one? It was of the five women who were supposed to be. It's like the name of the movie was taken from. I guess they used to be spies for Washington back in the day, and you see them battling these 220, 230 pound men and basically throwing them around the room, and you go, okay, great stunt work. I'm sure that everybody knew their moves very well, but in reality, that would not happen. It doesn't happen.
Yeah, and how much money did that movie make?
Get woke, go broke. So
we got one more case to run through before we run out.
Go for it.
And this is the this one, the affirmative action case. You know, what blows my mind about this affirmative action case is, well, several things. But I remember the idea, if I'm getting it right, was, you know, they wanted to make it equitable for minorities to get into some of these higher echelon colleges, so they reduced the qualifications for them. But, you know, because they were talking about the white people were getting all the stuff, but some kind of miraculous way they made the Asians white. Because the Asians typically would score higher than even the white people. Yeah. And I alluded it in my daily dose today. I don't think Asians are any smarter than anybody else. I think it's purely a fact that they had a culture or have a culture where studying is preeminent. Whereas many of us have a culture, I'm going to party, I'm going to relax, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I'm not going to put in that time. I think regardless of what color or race you are, if you put in the time, you can excel just like everybody else. So the Asians were getting beat out of their place because they scored higher because they weren't black enough or brown enough or whatever. Gentlemen, go for it.
Man, you know, it was good that this subject was brought before the court, and I think justice was done because affirmative action in the college admissions had morphed from an attempt to try to bring in minorities who might otherwise have been overlooked because of historical racial patterns to basically intentionally shunning Asian students in favor of those, you know, whatever persons who did not perform as well on a merit base simply because of the color of their skin. And all of that is a very bad twisting of a well-intentioned project that started in the 60s. And in fact, as far as I know, historically, affirmative action as we know it really got legs under, guess who? A Republican president named Richard Nixon. And Nixon, you know, he's been a villain in American history. Nixon was actually a pretty solid supporter of civil rights back in the 1950s. And he was a proponent of this idea of affirmative action. He was a relatively progressive Republican in that regard. But, you know, if you're thinking about the civil rights movement and the successes in the 1960s of leveling the playing field, and Nixon comes into office in 69 and affirmative action gets started under him, this is right on the tail end of a really monumental social change. And you could make the argument pretty cogently back then to say, you know what, Black Americans have been ignored. High-performing Black Americans would not get the same job or the same college admission as a high-performing white American because of the historical tension between whites and Blacks up to that point. Now, we fast forward to our time, 50 years later, regardless of what the exponents of CRT tell us, we've actually made progress in our race relations, believe it or not, and I'm happy to assert that. And quite frankly, it is an insult, in my view, to tell a Black American, you need a hand up because you're Black. You know, you have been oppressed, even though you don't feel it, even though you are high-performing, you're academic, you work hard, you have good values, you need a hand up. Now, this guy over here, who comes from an Asian family, well, you know what? They're just too darn smart, and we need you. We're going to give you that little wink, wink, nod, nod. Come into our university or take this job or whatnot because, gosh, we, you know, we're going to pat you on the head because we feel so sorry for you because generations ago, there were some white people who really mistreated your ancestors, and the vestiges of that are still here today. So come on in. All of that is insulting. It is a degradation to manhood. It lowers standards for those who want to achieve, and it really disincentivizes someone from actually putting in the hard work. If I'm a Black student right now, what incentive do I have to compete and work hard academically? Why should I do that? I'm going to get a free leg up because of the twisting of a policy that was meant to help ameliorate actual racist tendencies in the 1960s. So I think it's a step in the right direction, and we need to move towards responsibility and merit-based admissions in college and merit-based employment.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, even Justice Roberts, when he wrote his opinion, he talked about, look, what you can do is basically when you're going, if you want to apply to an Ivy League school, here's a crazy idea. Why don't you, say like when you're writing your essay for the admissions process, talk about your situation, talk about your life, talk about if you had hardships. It's like maybe it's like listing some of those hardships and how you conquered them. It's like how it's like, you know, how it's like in this case, if you have somebody with God's help, it's like, you know, being able to move, as like move ahead. And even though I had poor schools, I may have had only a mother or a father or someone like just a single parent. And through all those adversities, I might have had gang trouble or gangs trying to recruit me. All through that, I was able to keep my grades high. And through that, I want to bring that experience to this Ivy League school so that people here can share that experience and better themselves. You know, a rising tide lifts all boats.
You know, it's funny. It reminds me of this policy that they put in place recently, or Biden is trying to put in place, that people with a higher credit score would be charged a little bit more interest or something to get a loan to help the folks that are at a lower score. I mean, it's ridiculous. I think when you work hard, you appreciate what you have. If you work for a good education, you appreciate it. If somebody hands you something, you're not going to appreciate it because you didn't have to put the effort in. And then you might develop that attitude where you owe me. Well, you don't, nobody owes you anything. You know, it's up to the individual to stand up for himself. And like I said, it's up to men to be men to raise boys, to be men, to be responsible, to take care of their families, to do what's right, and to stand for themselves as men. We're about at the 1 hour point, gentlemen. We had a great conversation, you know.
Absolutely, thank you.
And I really appreciate you guys coming on, and maybe we'll do this another time. You fit your bill, but please let them know how to reach you.
Well, we are on the Anchor platform, which is anchor.fm/God and Government, all spelled out. And you can find it also on Spotify, God and Government, and on Facebook at the God and Government podcast. That's the best ways to find us.
Yep. I'm working on reading like Podcasting for Idiots, so we can develop our podcast further, so we can actually have comments and people can post on there, and we can actually reply to those as well. So we're moving forward slowly but surely. Baby steps, everybody.
Well, that sounds great. So Mark Richardson, John Steinrich, I'm glad to have you guys on the first Manly Monday. God bless you both.
God bless.
This is Samuel Talley, and I'm out.